Pick Six Podcast, Volume 2 for this first week of April. Hello, everybody. I'm Sam McEwen, along with Evan Bland, and we're here to talk just about the week that was with Nebraska football. Couple extra conversations there on Wednesday with four coaches, and I thought we could kind of cover some of that ground. We also got some really good questions on from Twitter that we're going to kind of plow through. We're going to try to get about 10 of them. We'll talk about a new commit from Nebraska, Victor Jones, out of Orlando Olympia High School. And of course, we've got a interesting thing about Nebraska Athletic Director Bill Moose being a potential candidate for the Pac-12 commissioner job. We'll touch on that too. I don't know that there's a lot of legs to that, but we'll briefly touch on it. As always, I want to remind everybody that our sponsor is Team Schwalbach. The Schwalbach Agency is a family-owned all-state insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. This might be a big boy toy kind of weekend. There's always family time over the weekend. My goodness. The weather this weekend, it's not going to be great today. This is a Friday, but Saturday, spectacular. 78 degrees. Sunday, 85 for Easter. Mm. Oh, my God. People are going to get out on the boats and their four-wheelers and their other wheelers and things like that. So it's going to be a big boy toy weekend, I suspect. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossack, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation, insurance, reviews, and quotes. They're going to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can contact them at 402-590-5200, or you can go to the website, www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach, the Schwalbach Agency, for their sponsorship of the Pick Six Podcast. Evan.
What's up, Sam?
It was cold on Wednesday when we talked to those four coaches in person. We talked to Mike Dawson, Greg Austin, Sean Becton, and Travis Fisher. Three things jumped out at me. One, the comments about special teams from multiple coaches. They sounded fed up with Nebraska special teams, more so than Scott Frost. Two, the notable confidence of Travis Fisher about his secondary room, which he should have. They had three returning starters and a bunch of young guys that I think everybody in the program likes. And three, just the conversation surrounding the offensive line with Greg Austin, talking about options and things like that. And also there being a sense of like resolve that they need to get a lot better there really quickly. You were over there with Austin, I believe, right?
Was.
So I was curious what your takeaways were from his chat. I like him a lot. He's just got a certain edge to him. And I thought he had a little bit of an edge on Wednesday when I went back and rewatched his video.
Yeah, I agree. What stood out to me was kind of a carryover of that conversation from Monday's Zoom about toughness and how the line needs to be setting the tone. And to that end, he credited Scott Frost for tweaking some things about how they go about their practice that puts less emphasis on going fast and more emphasis on holding blocks through the whistle and being tough and letting those guys do what they do to create explosive plays, maybe at the expense of a few seconds of hyperspeed with what they do with their drives. So his line was, to the extent of you can't hold your blocks through the whistle. If you're going 100% if you're going, as he's put it, balls to the wall every play. And if you're tired. So we saw what they have improved in winter conditioning and such, but it does seem like they are putting more of an emphasis on let's slow it down a little bit. If that means guys are holding their blocks and theoretically, then we're able to get to generate more explosive plays more consistently. So I thought that was interesting. And then it did seem like the tackle positions, as far as the ones are more or less set, they are big believers in Turner Corcoran and Bryce Benhart on the left and the right side. They like a lot of the guys behind them that are pushing them at tackle, guys like Brant Banks or Nuri, the Colorado State transfer who played guard when he was a starter there 2 years ago. So those are some guys that had stepped up there. But to me, it was still this spring at least, about what happens with those interior spots. And I asked Austin about just what does he look for in a good guard? And some of it's obvious, like you want to hold the line of scrimmage, you want to have a nastiness to you. But he said part of it too is just being a good teammate. Like if you're a guard, a lot of what you do is going to make the tackle look better, is going to make the center look better. And so there was a kind of a more of an intangible side to that thing too. And they have a lot of guys in contention, young guys, old guys. So I think that'll be interesting to see as this spring goes along too.
Yeah, I agree. you know, I think they've got finally some depth that they've that they've wanted for some time. And, you know, they feel really good, I think, about Turner Corcoran at left tackle. Yeah. They feel like he's in a really good spot. I think they felt like he needed a year to sort of acclimate. And of course, then the year doesn't count, which all the better. Bryce Benhart, I think there's still some development that they want to do there with Benhart. I think they want to see his movements be fluid and not, you know, not give up a costly, pointless holding penalty, things like that. And if Cam Jurgens snaps are good to go, I think there's a sense that he's one of the better interior linemen in the Big Ten. You have questions about that guard, those guard spots. You know, Hickson, I think, is probably going to get the first crack at it. Probably the most experienced of the bunch. But I'll be curious to see if within the context of the spring game, who gets those two snaps. And then as they go on into fall camp, whether they're trying a swing operation where they're putting a guy in for a drive or two to keep people fresh, because I still think Nebraska is going to run some tempo along the way. You know, Travis Fisher's comments I thought were notable. He obviously feels really, really good about Cam Taylor-Britt, Markell Dismuke, and Deontay Williams. But I think there's also a lot of optimism about, you know, Miles Farmer, who's probably going to be in a safety rotation, Quentin Newsom, who I would say is the front runner to start opposite Cam Taylor-Britt, Nadab Joseph being a quality backup, probably behind Taylor-Britt. And then you have, you know, a bunch of other people. Braxton Clark is an interesting player. Have to see how he comes back from the shoulder injury. Taman Lynam, and then Noah Pulla-Gates, a few others. And so I feel like it was interesting to listen to Fisher sort of love on his group in a way that maybe I haven't heard quite before. He likes the work ethic, that crew, and also maybe their physical talents. It's a big group of players. Outside of Pulla-Gates, who is more of a smaller, get-inside-your-pads kind of guy, you're talking about a size profile that's pretty impressive. Really with all those players. And so, you know, they're going to have one of the bigger secondaries in the Big Ten. Can all those guys sort of flip their hips and run with Big Ten receivers? If they were in the Pac-12, if they're in the SEC, I'd be like, I don't know. The Big Ten does not have the receiver profile that some of the other leagues do. And so I do think you can take a Braxton Clark, who's 6'3" and a half, 6'4", put him at corner and he can flip his hips and run with almost any receiver in the Big Ten. I don't know if that would be true if he was trying to cover Devonta Smith or Jamar Chase in the SEC, but of course, Nebraska doesn't play in the SEC, so they don't have to worry about it. The Oklahoma game, I think, will be the one where you're like, how well will that secondary, which is big and athletic, but maybe not blazing fast, how will they hold up? You were over there for Sean Becton, and I'm curious. He had comments about the tight ends, but his comments about special teams were even more notable, weren't they?
Yeah, fired up, man. Yeah, he, you know, if you talk to Sean Becton before, he's a relaxed guy a lot of the time. But, man, he his eyes showed some fire when he was talking about special teams. And, you know, it's because – as we mentioned, it just hasn't been good enough at Nebraska for a long time. And while they have had guys as kind of the figurehead of special teams, whether that was Jovan DeWitt or, you know, more recently from Jonathan Rutledge as an analyst, it's been a collective sort of effort from the assistants. They each assistant or position coach has certain areas of special teams, punt return, kickoff return, what have you, extra point, block shield, all this that they take responsibility for, that they take the lead in, that they evaluate and try to decide what personnel should fill those certain spots. And so everybody was feeling it, right? Like it goes beyond just like, hey, this is a problem for our team and it's costing us games. These are units that these coaches have invested in as well, have coordinated right. with the special teams head about and seen repeated frustration. And so, yeah, I mean, Sean Becton was fired up. He said it's going to get better. Obviously, that's what you would hope a guy like that would say. A new leadership with Mike Dawson there. And I think part of the evolution of that position at Nebraska too has been as they've started stacking these classes, to filling that out with athletes who are scholarship types, guys who are contributing on offense and defense, because it just hasn't been the case these first handful of seasons under Frost. And there are a lot of reasons for that, attrition and a lot of different things, but they feel like now they have the depth to put out a quality unit there. And certainly when you add in the COVID factor and how they're going to be deeper, just like everybody's going to be deeper.
Right.
It feels like that's maybe one area where that extra depth is going to show more of an immediate sort of effect.
You'd like to think so. You'd like to think so. last year, I felt like they did an okay job on certain groups, but there were flaws everywhere. And some of the flaws on the punt team are just, they got to get a better punter. Mm-hmm. Either Pristup's got to get better or Daniel Cherney's got to emerge now that he's healthy. They need to have a better punter. Punt return, they gave up the two fake punts. There were other issues there. Kickoff return was poor the whole year, and kickoff was poor. So, I think there's just a lot of groundwork to do. And I think Dawson is a guy that people respect as a technician. I know that there's Bill Bush is going to probably do some of the behind the scenes work. I don't want to overshoot what Bill Bush is capable of from an analyst perspective. I think there's going to be a lot put on his plate by the media. I think they're going to turn the guy into something of another coordinator. I think you have to be thoughtful and careful about that, not only as it relates to the 10 full-time assistants that Nebraska has, but also just presuming that Bush can resolve all those things that quickly, I think is a lot to ask of a guy who's coming, obviously he lives here and he has a family here, but he's transitioning back like anyone else. And so there's certain things that, that's just, you're reacclimating to life and all that stuff. And so I think there's an impression, we do this a lot around here where we overtalk people very quickly. I've seen it already with Thomas Fedoni. There's this impression that he's going to come in, and I understand he's the number one tight end in the country, but that he's going to come in and he's going to have this, 40 catch season. That's probably not going to happen. And it won't be because he's not a good player. It's because he's got two guys in front of him who are really good enough that Kurt Raftall left the program. And I don't think Raftall's bad. And on top of that, it's just going to take time to learn all the things you got to learn in this offense. Cause I don't think it's a tricycle offense. I don't think it's so simplistic that guys pick it up right away. I really don't.
No,
I think there's some nuance to it, and it's more complex than we've probably presented it.
Well, we've seen that countless times with the freshman receivers that have come in and learned just chunks of the playbook, how it's been slow going for some of the younger running backs to learn the scheme. You mentioned Trent Hickson earlier. Greg Austin came out and said Wednesday he felt like he probably was out there a year too early,
right?
In 2019 when he started the whole season. So we haven't seen a lot of guys come in and make immediate differences. Adrian Martinez would be the exception.
And Wandale.
Yep. He would come in and do that as well. But no, I agree. As we've heard the coaches talk about how they run their system, it's not so much about play calls as it is about options within a play where they can, run pass option sort of situations where they can adapt and adjust based on what they see from the defense. We hear from Mario Verduzco about being a quick blinker and being able to process the next play, especially if you're part of an offense that's snapping the ball every 12 to 15 seconds. I mean, you have to, there's a lot of mental work that goes into that just as much as there is physically being able to get back out there and do it again. So I totally agree. It feels like certainly with Nebraska in the last handful of seasons, there have not been those big impact freshman guys beyond a couple that we just mentioned. And then they feel like maybe that there's a benefit of that once you get up to speed, once you get old and stale. But because Nebraska's been unable to do that, I think that's been a big part of what has kind of kept the wheels spinning, so to speak, here through a couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a good thought. Let's move to recruiting. Nebraska got a commit from Orlando Olympia receiver Victor Jones. There's a lot of different numbers out there about how tall he is. I know the Orlando Sentinel said he's 6'4". There's other things out there that say 6'3". He told me he's 6'2", 193, which is a big receiver, incidentally. You know, that means at Nebraska, he'll probably carry, 205, 210. That's a big guy. That's a big receiver. And so Jones continues the trend of sizable receivers that Nebraska is trying to recruit. I think what's interesting about Victor Jones, not just that he was a surprise commit of some sort, but that he does have the sort of the verifiable track times. I know that Sean Becton was pretty involved in this process. Once he got a wind of the track times that Jones was able to run, I think Nebraska accelerated its recruiting all the way back to last year. And he runs a 22 flat 200, which is fast. I'm not a big 200 guy as to how that translates to football, but it's fast. And then a 10.900, which is fast. Mm-hmm. He wants to run lower than that. He thinks he can in the 10.7s and 10.6s, which would be impressive. But another receiver, and this one I think they feel like they can send him deep, that he is a deep ball receiver, maybe closer to a Stanley Morgan. I don't know if Stanley Morgan's the right comp. Maybe Brandon Kinney. Maybe a Brandon Riley. Riley was really fast too. Somebody that they can send over the top and maybe can high point a ball and be a deep threat that can take the top off. I don't know how many guys they got like that actually right now.
Yeah, and his commitment, I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere, did it not? Yes. I don't know if you anticipated it, but
no one did. None of the media anticipated it. Nobody will. If they tell you they did, they didn't. But Nebraska had been working on him a long time.
Mm-hmm. Back to middle school, he said, right?
Essentially, I mean, you know, his freshman year.
Yeah.
Again, Becton's very connected down there. He knows all the coaches, and so if there's a player that A, they think they can get, and B, he's going to know about. I mean, he basically knows all the coaches in that coaching community there in Miami and Atlanta. And he helped them out, I think. And I think he was helpful in cultivating. I don't know that Victor Jones would have necessarily been going north of Wake Forest if it wasn't for Becton. I think that's a big piece. And Frost, I think, is a big piece too. This is a guy that I think is probably a pretty darn good receiver, but was fairly interested in staying. He would have been willing to play for UCF or FAU or Coastal Carolina. Like, I think he isn't necessarily looking to play at Kentucky or whatever. I think Nebraska just recruited him every single day for a year. Yeah. And I think Becton's presence is a big factor in getting those kids to trust to come up here. And I think that's true of the Georgia kids too.
His motivation is interesting to me because, you know, obviously oftentimes it's guys, especially since they haven't been able to make campus visits, it's been guys regionally or guys who grew up around the program. You know, in his case, he knows the coaching staff well, but like you said, he's not familiar really with the Midwest, hasn't been up,
right,
that way. And it, by all accounts, it sounds like he has other kind of aspirations additionally outside of football that tie in the name, image, likeness aspect that Nebraska is promoting. And so in some ways, he's kind of symbolic of this new push that they're making for that, this new push that they're making, I think, for identifying characteristics that they believe will succeed and thrive outside of Florida, obviously in response to the attrition that they had from that state in recent cycles. So it's fascinating to me, kind of his reasons for committing, why he would do it now, especially with officials opening up here, presumably starting in June. And that, of course, goes, that's nothing to say about his talent beyond that with the speed and everything that you laid out there. So kind of a fascinating April Fool's Day, sort of development for the program that I don't think anyone saw coming. And it was kind of interesting.
It was. Yeah. I think this guy wanted to pick a school where he really felt good about the staff and the coaches. And I think he's going to be the kind that stays committed. He had a pretty quiet recruiting process. I think, again, if he had wanted to push it and go to a lot of places and do all that stuff, his recruiting rating might be a little higher, a little bit different than it is. But I think he's pretty comfortable with the choice that he made and is not going to – I don't know who to compare it to. Maybe Gabe Irvin, who I think kind of – you know, Gabe Irvin, I think, is a really good player. And I think once he kind of found Nebraska, and Becton played a role in that too, there wasn't this giant push for him to do something else. Like he came to Nebraska, he committed to Nebraska sight unseen as well, and you know he just wanted to do it. Same with what's his teammate's name?
Malik Williams.
Yeah, same guy, same deal there. If Becton's got an in. The relationships are pretty deeply built. Mm-hmm. And so they do, I think he does, and Nebraska does a good job. Now, I know they've had some issues in Florida, but some of those were picking players they had recruited at UCF or junior college guys or whatever. But if he has a pretty good in with a recruit, they tend to stick around because he's a big piece of why they're here. He's a very important part of that staff. He's enormously important in the role that he has. So a pretty good pickup there. Again, sometimes you don't know a lot about these guys because their recruiting was so specific and Nebraska kind of was quiet about it. Sean Hardy is the same way. Kamonte Grimes, a lot of these, they're all very similar stories. Where you know if they were pretty connected to Nebraska for a while, mm-hmm. And I think that describes Victor Jones as well. They're probably only going to take one or two more receivers in the class. My top guy would be Jason Essex out of North Kansas City. To me, he's unbelievable. I don't know what his academic situation is, but he's outstanding. Kentucky's recruited him really well. Quentin Connolly would be up there too. He's 6'5 and 190. I think Nebraska's got a good chance of getting him. I like Essex more. Physical, great route runner. Young, he's only 16, I think. Essex would be at the top of my list. And then it kind of depends on what they want to do with those kids from Hayes, Kansas. They're both athletes, so those will be guys worth watching. But they'll probably only take one or two more quarterback. You know, I think they're in a better spot perhaps for 2023 with Reese Mooney, who I talked to for about 15 minutes earlier this week, than they may be with 2022 prospects. Mooney is a dual sport guy, football, baseball. He's got an accurate arm. He said his arm length is about 60 yards. But accuracy is a big piece with him. He can kind of throw all the throws, and he's got a pretty good motion, and he really likes Nebraska. And Nebraska offered him last April. And so he's probably a year out, but I could see him coming up for a spring game and liking what he sees and committing to Nebraska, kind of like Logan Smothers did, you know, a year and a half before he was going to sign. 2022, it's going to be interesting. You know, I think they thought maybe they could get Richard Torres out of San Antonio, and he did not pull the trigger right away and commit. So now he's got Washington State and K-State and Utah, and none of the Texas schools have offered yet. But I think they might. You know, I wouldn't surprise me if Baylor offered or Texas Tech, probably not Texas. I think Sarkisian is looking for different players, but Torres is not going to be easy to pull. There's been a lot of smoke around MJ Morris out of Atlanta. He's very highly rated. I think Nebraska's done a nice job of recruiting him. I think that's going to be a very tough pull. Very, very tough. Florida State's in, but there's other schools that are too. Arkansas's done a really good job of recruiting him. Nebraska has two, but I think that's just going to be a tough pull. Now Nebraska may be able to say, look, man, if you come here, you might start as a true freshman, and that might perk his ears up. And then there's another guy out of Alabama that Nebraska's kind of kicking the tires on too, or has for a while. And, you know, he's interesting too. I don't know. I think they're going to offer some more guys. That's going to be my sense of it.
What's your read on like the urgency?
Connor Harrell is the guy out of Alabama.
Yeah, right. What's your sense on the urgency that they feel to get a guy now? Right. I mean, they have Adrian Martinez, who presumably could be the starter again in 2022. They have two quarterbacks, and Logan Smothers and Heinrich Harburg, who are technically true freshmen in eligibility. So, I mean, I know that they probably want to take a quarterback. What's the urgency in getting one now before officials open, or even waiting and maybe getting some momentum and swinging some of those other guys back their way if they see some progress? Like, you get a sense for when or how much they want a commitment now?
They don't have, you know, I think a lot of these kids do commit now. And so at some level, your hand's forced by the quarterback's wishes. Like, you know, if you knew that you were going to get a commit from a quarterback in November and he was just going to hold on to it until then maybe, you know, you wait it out, kind of see what emerges. Somebody gets hurt and then Smothers has to play or whatever. But these kids commit now. I mean, there's a lot of them are already off the board. And so being off the board, I think, creates an imperative to you better get a guy. You better go get a guy. And again, I think Torres was an option where, you know, there's things about his game that are very, very appealing. I mean, his arm strength is very appealing. And, you know, his ability to look over a defense, didn't have the best throwing motion, but he's throwing over everybody. So it's not like he's going to get the ball knocked down. So he's like 6'5", 6'6". So there's a lot of appealing things about Torres. Mm-hmm. And they offered him, and all these other schools came in. And I don't know exactly if they would have taken it right away, but they don't typically offer unless they plan on accepting. And then Morris, you know, I mean, he's a good player, but that's going to be a tough pull. And then I can't tell you a lot about Connor Harrell. I haven't looked at a lot from him. There's another kid named Anthony Mix that they haven't been in contact with.
Yeah, for him a long time ago.
Yeah, they did.
Like many years ago.
Alex Ori out of Divine Azigbo's old school is a possibility. Gavin Wimsatt has essentially eliminated Nebraska.
Yeah.
AJ Blanco is a kid out of Hawaii they offered. I don't know. You know, again, you're getting into a lot of names. I think one of the challenges they've got is they got to get through spring, see what they have. They have to assume Martinez is going to be gone after this year, even though Martinez could come back. I'm guessing Adrian wants to go to the NFL. So there's a lot of different pieces there that are still up in the air. It's not that big of an issue. Like, if Smothers is as good as they thought he was when they recruited him, then they're fine. But, you know, we don't know yet. Well, and Mario, I don't know what Mario will say on Monday about it. I don't know. what he'll say about some others. He doesn't usually, he's not all that forthcoming typically.
Right. Well, I just think it's an interesting dynamic because on the one hand, like you said, Nebraska's set for this year. If Smothers shows what he can do, then they're set for a few years. But I think you can contrast that with this idea that we've talked about a number of times on this podcast, which is if Nebraska's offense is really going to take that step and become a contender in the Big Ten, it has to start with an elite level quarterback recruit. And if you don't, and if you don't land that guy, I mean, a lot of these guys that you're talking about that Nebraska's offered have kind of been part of that second or third wave of offers after the initial, maybe most highly rated guys have gone off the board. And so while it's not the end all be all, there is, I think, a sense of concern too, that like, if that's the position that turns this thing around on offense, it's for whatever reason, they've had trouble finding guys to turn the key and lock in on joining that thing. And when you look at what Matt Lubick's track record is with quarterbacks, it's very good. Scott Frost's track record with quarterbacks at Oregon was very good. I'm not sure what to make of it, because again, in one sense, there's not a ton of urgency in the next season or two, but when you look at it down the line and see like what you want this program to become, if you're a fan or the coaches, like, you just wonder if that guy's in the room and what it's going to take to get that guy in the room. Because right now, they're, like you said, with a guy like Torres, I mean, they were the first to offer him. He doesn't pull the trigger, and now they're in a battle for him, and they might not, you know, be in contention for a guy that they worked to identify and put on the map in the first place. It's got to be kind of frustrating, and it feels like it's kind of a holding pattern there where we come back to what we've always said, which is when they start winning games, maybe that some of that stuff starts going their way. But yeah, I don't know. It's just been an interesting kind of dichotomy to watch with that position.
Yeah, it is. Let's go to these Twitter questions. There's some good ones. And I'm going to ask some. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's start with a fun one. If you and Evan entered the transfer portal, what would be your dream job and why? Go ahead.
You know, it would not be a job in professional sports media. I've had people ask me, like, do you want to cover Major League Baseball or the NFL or whatever? And I don't, like, because I enjoy those products kind of as a fan.
Right.
And when you cover it, you lose that joy goes away. It just is kind of part of the deal of being in the media and covering a team. So it wouldn't be that. I don't know. In this line of work in sports media, I feel like I kind of am there. When you talk about Nebraska sports, it is the thing in this state, and you can go to other states and see how college sports is kind of an afterthought or on the back burner, at least for whatever professional sporting events are going on there. And so I think that's something that's unique and special about the state of Nebraska in that way. I don't know if I wasn't in media, so to speak. When I was in high school, I wanted to be an optometrist. So that was a hard turn from that to what I'm doing now. But I don't know, probably something more, routine based, medically based, where be able to help improve the quality of life of somebody else. So it'd be probably nothing in journalism, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that'd probably be true for me too. It would either be like a professor of literature, 20th century, or it would be in the film industry. So I love the movie industry more than I like TV, although TV is great too, the creative industry. So working for places that develop content and stuff like that. I would want to work in one of those. If it were in journalism, it would be probably film criticism. Yep. Not a big, there's more really, really gifted critics today probably than there ever has been, but it doesn't pay that well. And it tends to be pretty, there's an element of groupthink today that is a little alarming. So the spectrum of criticism is probably narrower than it was 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. But yeah, it would probably be in those areas. So that's a good one to start with. All right, this one. Here we go. Chicken or the egg? Has the issue been with our QBs not getting the ball to our wide receivers, or have our wide receivers not been talented enough in learning the offense effectively in order for the QBs to get them the ball? Are we really expecting a passing game change from the last 2 years?
It's a great question. It really is. And I mean, I think it's been both, right? Like if you start from the Martinez side of it, or the quarterback side of it, he's been hurt for most of the last 2 years.
Banged up, no question.
Shoulder injuries, things like that, that certainly have played a role. The offensive line, which I think will be a strength this year, has not always been that way the last couple. There hasn't been a ton of time to make those downfield reads. But, you know, as you have noted and I've noted, when you're in the press box, there have been a lot of games where there's been a guy open downfield for Nebraska and you're like, throw it, hit him, he's open. And maybe he misses him, or maybe he doesn't see him, or he overthrows him, or whatever it might be. So certainly there has been that element of it, but I think you can flip it around too and say, man, with the receivers, you can see flashes from some guys, but the inability to learn the offense thoroughly for a lot of their more physically talented players has been a big issue. They've missed on a lot of their early receiver recruits from the first couple cycles, particularly when they went the junior college route. Guys just didn't pan out. And as we've talked about the evolution of this team going from shorter to taller, bigger bodied guys, you know, you think most of the guys who have been primary targets for Adrian Martinez the last 3 years have been 6 foot or shorter. That's just how it's been. And so there hasn't been that margin of error for him in that regard too. So when you start to project what's going forward this year, the bodies are bigger. The proven production at Nebraska is not there. It is at some other schools with guys like Samari Torre or Omar Manning in junior college, but the bodies are there that you can kind of see where it's going. I think the question then becomes, how much better can Adrian Martinez be in his fourth year? How healthy is he? How much does the offensive line's improvement factor into that? And so, yeah, it's hard to just blame one thing, because it feels like there's been this confluence of circumstances that have played into this thing since Scott Frost came 4 years ago.
Yeah, I lean probably toward the receivers needing to be better, that there's just pieces that they haven't been good enough there. There have been receivers that have been open over time, but I feel like the receiving core wasn't as good as it could have been in 2019. In 2020, I think there was a transition season. They finally started to decide who they wanted to play toward the end of the season, and I think they feel a lot better about what they're going to do here in the upcoming season. As for Martinez, he's got to anchor down in the pocket, and he does that better. He does that better than McCaffrey did. McCaffrey really struggled to – first read isn't there, and he's running. And didn't always trust where guys were going to be. You've got to stick that back foot on the top of your drop, anchor down, and throw the football. And I feel like Martinez got better at that as the season went on last year. You know, stick your butt in there. Don't make your offensive linemen have to wonder where you're going to be when they're blocking. And I think Martinez got better and better at that. And that's what makes good quarterback play. Like it isn't always the spectacular run around. You know, those players are fun and they're neat to watch. And they're the ones that everybody goes, whoa. And, oh, look at that play that'll make in the NFL. The Russell Wilson play, the Aaron Rodgers play. That's all cool stuff. But just being able to, you know, sit your rear end down in the pocket and fire accurately is a great trait to have at this level, at every level. You know, even the best, Patrick Mahomes, one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen. He played a horrible game in the Super Bowl because he did not sit his butt down and just throw the football. He kept drifting backwards and running right into pressure and doing stuff that you don't do when you're a seasoned smart quarterback. I don't know why Mahomes played that way in the game, but he did. He kept drifting 9 yards back and right into the pressure of the Buccaneers front four. It was just wasn't good. And that happens to the best of them. And so Martinez is getting better there. And I think you're going to see him have a passing game that at least makes more sense. I don't know if they're going to complete 69% or whatever. Martinez set the single season record last year at 70.3. A lot of people don't know that, but he did. Anyway, I don't know what I think the receivers have something to do with it. And I think they're probably going to get, they're going to get a little bit better there. Where is Ramir Johnson in the running back line during spring ball? Is he number one, number two, number three? Well, we don't know, Greg. We don't know where he's at. We'll talk to Ryan Held on Monday about where Ramir Johnson is at. They obviously didn't sign Marquise Stepp because they felt great about everybody that was in the room. They obviously wanted somebody who had played a lot of major college football. And Marquise Stepp comes in as the most experienced running back in the room. He played two seasons at USC. He was hurt at times, but he played more football than Ramir Johnson or Marvin Scott or Sevion Morrison or Gabe Irvin. And who was the other one? Ronald Tompkins. He's played more football than any of those guys. So they brought him in for a reason. I would have to think that Ramir Johnson is number two or number three in camp at this moment. Wouldn't you, Evan?
I would. If we're doing one of those prove it lists of guys that like need to make a move now, he would be right near the top for me because if you're not maybe inspiring confidence from your coaches if they go out and bring in a guy like Marquise Stepp to contribute right away. And Ronald Tompkins was the number two to open last year. He had some injuries, and I think Gabe Irvin, who comes in as a true freshman, is a guy to watch too. It's just physically gifted as he is, and I think he has a pretty good head on his shoulders too in terms of learning the offense. So I think Ramir Johnson, his calling card was always supposed to be his speed, his quickness off the line. I don't know that we've seen that necessarily manifest through his couple seasons here. Maybe he put in some good work in the offseason. Maybe he's a different guy or an improved player from what he's been. I would list two or maybe three other guys right now that I would put out there just based on what I've heard and seen in games. So it's going to be one of those big prove it springs for him. What did he do in the offseason to get better?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Ramir Johnson's athletic ability is not that in question. He seems like a good athlete, and when he gets running, he's pretty good. I think it's just I think it's an adjustment to this offense and having that ability to run in that zone scheme where you've got to have a little bit of a tempo when you enter the line. It can't just be, running as hard as you can into the back of some offensive lineman's rear end. It's not the way it is. You've got to have a little bit of timing, and once you learn it, I think you've got it, but it's just not always natural for these guys. I thought Marvin Scott had some of that last season. He got a concussion and he didn't play much after that. So maybe he can get some run. And then Ronald Tompkins, we just don't know. I mean, he wasn't healthy apparently even last year. So Sevion Morrison is in that group. I'm sure he'll get a long look. And, again, I think Gabe Irvin's a nice player. I think he's, he had a nice high school career. He just kind of under the radar because he just didn't make a big deal out of himself, That's just not who he was. All right, next one. I'm behind Frost, but how many more years does NU hang on until they have to make a change if losing seasons continue? Said another way, when must he produce a 500 season? Scott Frost isn't going anywhere, folks. And it would be, I think it's viewed as foolhardy to make a change based on, a rough start to the tenure. I do think they're going to go 500 this year. I think they'll do better than 500, to be honest with you. But, you know, if you got, if they're sincere about having a long runway and coach and play like you have one, start learning how to win close games to start, you know, start developing, building slowly. You know, Nebraska's got to completely, when he took over, they were going to completely retool. I mean, you know, Mike Riley was 3 years into essentially making Nebraska another Wisconsin. That's where they were going. I mean, they had the same kind of offense. They wanted the same kind of players, fullbacks, you know, bigger receivers. They were making that journey, and they blew it up. They didn't like what they saw. They didn't want pro-style quarterbacks around here. They didn't like Mike because he wasn't from, you know, the Osborne tree or whatever. So they fired him, and that's fine. That's fine. He was flawed, and he made lots of mistakes. But once he left, what they brought in was not, you know, Scott Frost was not doing what Riley was doing, and they completely changed again. And so it was going to take time, and it has taken time. Like, it was 2019 was the year to go 7-5 or 8-4, and they blew it. They just flat blew it. They shouldn't have lost to Colorado. They should not. I mean, they did lose to Indiana and deserve to lose to Indiana, but that's a game you can't lose. And then they lost to Purdue. They shouldn't have lost that game. They blew it. And so, you know, everybody kind of knew what the deal was, and it was going to take time to get to 9 or 10 wins. And they're building the roster, and this is where they're at. You have to be honest about it, pragmatic. You can't lie about it. You can't pretend that they're where Wisconsin or Iowa is, because they're not.
Yeah, I still think the recruiting class conversation is interesting, because, you know, you can look back at that 2017 class and how decimated that was with attrition. And those would have been the guys who would be your junior and senior types right now. the 2018 class, which when Frost came, just happened to coincide with the early signing period. And so instead of 2.5 months or so to put together a class, they basically had 3 weeks, and they did it while they were still at UCF. And so that was that shotgun class where they took a chance on a lot of guys, most of them who didn't pan out. The 2019 class has been better. The 2020 class has been better. I think the 2021 class, as a result of COVID, was more regionalized. And I think that's going to stick more than some of the players previously had been. So, you know, you can really look at it and think they have their three full classes in. And I still think you have to have a 4 or even a 5 class sort of picture of what they've done before you can fairly judge what this staff has been. And I think, you know, the other thing that would make a big difference in terms of fans is you just need that one big win somewhere along the line. I mean, everyone talks about 12-20 for Scott Frost, but of those 12, like, what's that win that really got people excited? Was it 9-6 over Michigan State in the snow? Was it beating Illinois in Champaign in a shootout? Like, there just aren't a lot of wins that have excited the fan base. There hasn't been that moment where, since Scott Frost has been here, or really since they've been to a bowl game, where you say, man, where were you when this happened? Or I was sitting in this seat and this thing happened and the crowd was nuts. Like, it just, there hasn't been the delivering of the excitement of the promise that was put out there years ago. So I'm still in the camp that says it's hard to judge what this thing can be or is for another couple of years still, until they have, again, 5 classes, real classes, to kind of do what they want to do.
Yeah. He's going to get all that time and then some. Does the Big Ten have stock in Nebraska losing? The schedules since joining the league have been brutal, especially the last 4 years. Did Scott Frost's comments about the Big Ten needing to adjust to us bring that on? No. The Big Ten has set Nebraska's schedules years in advance. The challenge that Nebraska's had that other teams have not is that Nebraska drew Ohio State as a 6-year opponent starting in 2016. This is the last of those games against them. And then Nebraska drew for 5 years Michigan. And that's part of the challenge, is that Nebraska drew those teams. It was kind of a raw deal. It's too bad. but that's kind of the way it went. And they have not been close, except for the 2018 game, to beating Ohio State. They have not even been close. The games have not been close. They lost 62-3 in 2016, 56-14 in 2017. They lost by 5 in 2018. They lost 48-7 in 2019. And last year it was 52-17. And the 2016 game and the 2019 game were two of the more lopsided experiences that I've ever seen in any college football game, much less Nebraska. And so those games have been very demoralizing, and Ohio State is peaking and they've been really good. Nebraska has not. So they had those games, and that's too bad. And then now they're going to get Michigan, and Michigan is not Ohio State. So people should not equate the two programs. That's one thing. Last year they got a raw deal, obviously, with having to play Penn State as well as Ohio State. That's the way the cookie crumbled. They were already slated to play both those teams anyway in 2020. And it just
sort of
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say they beat Penn State anyway. So
they did. You know, I think the schedules have been hard, but I don't think they're designed to, you know, hurt Nebraska or anything like that. The Ohio State thing is just what it is. People have talked about the 2021 schedule being the hardest in history. First of all, I don't agree with that. And I'm not trying to be contrarian when I say it. I don't believe that that's true. I think Nebraska's played harder schedules. One schedule that certainly jumps to mind is the 87 schedule when they played UCLA, South Carolina, one of the best South Carolina teams ever, with Sterling Sharp and others. They played at Arizona State. They played Oklahoma State with Thurman Thomas and Barry Sanders. They won the game 35-0, but it was the Thurman Thomas, Barry Sanders team. And they played number one Oklahoma. And then, of course, they played Florida State in the bowl game. My sense is that that schedule was harder. And then I think they had some harder schedules in the 70s as well. In recent years, I think this schedule is probably the hardest that they've had because of the presence of Oklahoma on the schedule. Makes it hard because OU is probably a top five team, and Ohio State probably is a top five team as well. But some of the other names on the schedule are names. Michigan State is starting completely over. Completely over. Michigan is, no one knows what's going to happen to that team this year. We just don't know. And then Wisconsin's in flux. Iowa's probably going to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten West. And by God, they can beat Northwestern any single year they want to beat them. I don't care.
Yeah.
They can. Northwestern's never going to blow Nebraska out, ever. So, you know, that game, they got to stop acting like that's a beyond Nebraska's grasp. The team that I'd worry about, and they better be on their game, is when they go to Minnesota. That won't be an easy game. Minnesota feels really good about itself. PJ Fleck feels really good about his team. And they added some pieces in from the transfer portal to their defense that will help their defense. And you got to worry a little bit about that game because Minnesota came in here last year down 33 guys, and they outcoached and outplayed Nebraska pretty fierce. And that should concern people because I don't really think PJ Fleck's going away. He's not going to quit. He does not get complacent. And Nebraska has to bring its A game when they play Minnesota. In the last two seasons, they have not done that. They didn't bring their A game up to that rainy night up there in Minneapolis, and they were not ready to beat Minnesota this most recent year. So that's a team that I'd worry about. And they've got to find a way to beat that, to win that game. And Fleck's tough. And I think Fleck's also very motivated when they play Nebraska too. So there's challenges within that schedule, but the name Michigan and the name Michigan State doesn't mean that this is 2015. Yeah. It just doesn't mean that. These are not the same programs that they were back then. Michigan State's completely starting over, and really, truly. And they're two or three years behind Nebraska. And Michigan, God only knows what Michigan's going to be. Nobody knows. They don't know. I mean, they signed their coach to a weird contract. I mean, they don't know what they're doing. I mean, they got Western Michigan, Washington, Northern Illinois, Rutgers at Wisconsin, at Nebraska. That's their first six games. They ought to be, you know, 4-3-2 when they play Nebraska, but you never know. There's no way to know.
Yeah. I would just add, you know, the idea of the Big Ten having stock in Nebraska losing, I think a lot of that has been exacerbated by what we've heard from Nebraska in the last year relative to what we've heard from the rest of the league. I mean, Bill Moose has not been shy about how he felt like they were slighted with the way the 2020 schedule ended up and how tough this schedule is. And, you know, it was Nebraska who sued the league last year. It was, Nebraska who tried to find a non-conference game and had to get told no. Like, there are just a lot of different parts to this that I think is more a reflection on how Nebraska culturally hasn't been a great fit for the Big Ten in terms of its priorities athletically, and less about the Big Ten saying, you know, screw you guys, we're trying to keep you down. I think it's more, we've seen how, with these recent circumstances, just how awkward of a fit Nebraska is with all of its league brethren to the East.
The crossovers in 2022 are Rutgers, Indiana, and Michigan. You can manage that. That's very manageable. In 2023, the crossover games are, again, Michigan, Maryland, and Michigan State. You can manage that. Mm-hmm. That's manageable.
Absolutely.
Let's see what the crossovers are in 2024. Michigan again, obviously. Then Ohio State's back on there, and Penn State, which is, you know, that's just ridiculous. So, that, I mean, that's absurd that you got. And the way the schedule's set up right now, they play Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State all in a row.
Whew.
It's just, you know, that's kind of comical. Whew. But so, yeah, there's some moments in there. That's 2024. That year they play UTEP, Colorado, and somebody else at home. And then in 2025, crossovers are Michigan, Indiana, and Rutgers again. So, you know, 2024 is ridiculous. The others are more than manageable. And this year's manageable. This is a weird Michigan team. They're a weird, it's a weird team. They don't know. They don't even know their quarterback's going to be. Because Milton left, right? He transferred. He's in the portal, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. So, they don't know who their quarterback's going to be. They're really young. They got a brand new defensive coordinator. They got a brand new coaching staff, really, for the third time in 4 years. So, anyway, they can recruit. I mean, Harbaugh's good at that, but their management of their program is iffy. All right, I think that's all the questions that we had. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk to Adrian Martinez on Monday, thank goodness. About time. And then Ryan Held and Mario Verduzco will talk, and then there'll be some other players. From what I can tell our listeners and our readers is, I think you're going to get some different kind of interviews this spring. Our hope is that you're going to talk to some guy. We're going to talk to some guys that maybe A, we haven't talked to before, and B, aren't the same players that we constantly talk to. That's kind of the hope, is that there's going to be a little bit more of a fresh perspective this spring. I anticipate we're going to hear from all the transfers, which is good. I mean, they brought here to play, so it's not like they're freshmen. We may hear from some true freshmen this year. We're probably going to hear from some. We'll hear from Adrian, obviously, multiple times in the spring, but we're going to hear from some other people. Then, and I think that'll make for some good copy content for Husker fans versus, you know, the 17th time we've talked to Matt Farniak. So it got a little stale last couple of years talking to the same guys over and over. And I think you're going to hear from some new names this spring.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge on defense, though, considering.
Well, I think you're going to hear from some guys you haven't heard from a lot. I mean, we'll hear probably one time from all those veterans, but I think you're going to hear from a Feldarius Payne, who we haven't talked to very much. And I think you're going to hear from a Ty Robinson. I think you're going to hear from a hopefully from Quentin Newsom and Miles Farmer, all players that we didn't talk to much. I mean, I think we've talked to Miles Farmer maybe once. So
maybe.
They feel good about some of their younger guys in their program. They're believers in some of those players. And I just think you're going to feel a looser atmosphere. I thought last year there was a lot of tension, not just because of COVID, but the Luke Adrian thing. And, you know, I think a lot of that tension's gone. Everybody knows who the quarterback's going to be. You don't have a guy that, you know, I mean, Luke always seemed like he was in kind of a hostage video when he talked to us. Very sort of rigid and uncertain of what he could say. I don't know. I think that was on him. I don't think that's some imposition Nebraska put on him. Nebraska's pretty cool with their players saying what they want, which I kind of appreciate about Scott. Because Scott always said what he wanted when he was a player. So I think Scott's always respected that right of his players to do the same. All right, we'll be back next week to talk more Husker football. I'm sure we'll have something to say about whatever Adrian has to say and Verduzco and all those guys. For Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Easter, everybody.